This reading this morning from the Old Testament might come as a little bit of a surprise, and I maybe should have introduced it a little bit more before I read. It's a story that likely you haven't heard before, am I right? Has anybody heard that story before? One, two, I bet you went to women's camp. Did you hear it there? It's a story that didn't get into the lectionary, and it's one of those gems buried within the book of Numbers. Numbers is not the most riveting read, if you've ever tried to get through it, but there's a couple of gems. This is one of them. In it we have the story of the people of Israel traveling through the desert, and a man named Korah dies with no sons, and in the tradition of the day, if you have no son, your property goes to others, even if you have daughters or a surviving spouse. So there are lots of Hebrew names, and it's a new context, but if you only remember five things from this sermon, I hope that it'll be five names. And I'll just get you to practice them with me at this moment. The names are Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. Five names to remember. So I was listening to the radio a few years ago, and a guy came on whose name was David Epstein, who at the time was the senior editor at Sports Illustrated magazine. But the reason that he was on the radio was that he just recently published a book called The Sports Gene. And in the book, he explores many things. Some things we might be wondering as we watch the World Cup or as we'd watch the Winter Olympics this winter. How can those athletes do what they do? What makes them so good? David Epstein explores this question. Are you born with the sports gene? Is there something that you inherit biologically that makes you a great athlete? And so he digs into this question, and what he discovers might surprise you. For one thing, he says he starts off by saying this idea of genetic inheritance, when it's associated with a physical attribute, has danger, he said, and it's been used, it's got its way into pseudoscience, and it's been used to promote racial divides. He said, so beware. When black athletes in North America were starting to make their mark in professional sports, he said there started to be rumors circulating that, they have a genetic disposition to be good athletes. And conversely, a genetic disposition for athletics meant conversely a genetic disposition for less intelligence. That was a story circulated in North America. And so David Epstein says, be very, very careful with these pseudoscientific genetic theories about what makes us what we are. Racism is a real problem that we continue to struggle with. And David Epstein says, of course, there are physical attributes that we do inherit from our parents. And some of us get it and some of us don't. Some of us are 7'7" and play NBA basketball and some aren't. But there's something else going on that makes athletes great. And this is what Epstein focuses on. He says that there are communities, or there's a culture of enthusiasm for a given sport in a given place that will produce large number of athletes. So for example, in Jamaica, There is one track and field club that has produced all their great world record-breaking sprinters. One track club in Jamaica. South Korea has 0.7% of the world's population, but has produced 40% of the world's top 1,000 women golfers. And most of them have come from one neighborhood in Seoul. In the history of the marathon, only 17 Americans have run it in less than 2 hours and 10 minutes. But in 1 month, in October 2011, 32 Kalenji tribes people did it. So what accounts for the success of these athletes? Epstein says, it is the culture of enthusiasm, the love for the sport that makes an athlete great, that produces great athletes. I noticed when I passed this church that there's a sign up that says friendly Presbyterians. Is there a friendly Presbyterian gene? Or do you just love being friendly? Not long after I heard David Epstein on the radio, I came across another book by a famous Canadian church historian named John Webster Grant. John Webster Grant discovered, to my amazement, something similar to what David Epstein had discovered about sport, except this time about church history. John Webster Grant discovered that in the township of Zorro, Ontario, there were a very high proportion of ministers, both Presbyterian and United Church, that came out of this one township. Lots and lots of ministers. And then in Cape Breton, Nova Scotia, same thing. All the ministers for the Maritimes seem to come from that island. What's going on here? Is there a minister gene? Is there a rev in the double helix? Is it the water? Rather than a biological inheritance, a physical inheritance, what John Webster Grant discovered was an historical, or what you might say even a spiritual inheritance. That in these places, 100 years or more ago, they had hosted revivals, religious revivals with huge tent meetings, fiery preaching, great, tremendous enthusiasm in prayer and hymn singing. And that these events had continued to smolder, producing church leadership for tens and 100 years later. A spiritual inheritance. Let me finally turn to our Bible story this morning. I love this little story buried in the book of Numbers. You won't find it in any lectionary, and if it hadn't been for a number of great feminist Bible scholars, I don't think I would have ever come across it myself. Five women: Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah seek an inheritance. But because they are women, their own Hebrew people will not permit them to inherit anything, and their father will die without a son. Their family name itself will be lost. When they get to the promised land, their family will not be allotted a parcel of land. But they do not give up. They petition Moses. Moses goes to Yahweh. Yahweh recognizes the justice of what they are asking and commands that they be given an inheritance. And so it is that the story ends in the book of Joshua, when the people of Israel arrive and the five daughters of Zelophehad are given land an inheritance. Of course, the inheritance of Mahla, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah goes far beyond a piece of land. What we have received from them is a story of courage and of justice seeking. In 1,000 years since that tradition has blossomed into a number of amazing movements. We can think of the suffragette movements. We can think of outside of the church, outside of the spiritual traditions, these events that have occurred that the church has contributed to. The civil rights movement, democracy movements around the world. And today, the truth and reconciliation movement, you might call it, in Canada. And so as we celebrate Canada Day, we celebrate this tradition of justice seeking that is passed down to us, I believe comes down to us through the Daughters of Zelophehad. But within the church itself, that tradition remains alive and continues to keep us seeking our true inheritance, our true spiritual inheritance. The inheritance of our Christian faith. It has been handed down to us by those who worshipped in this place. They have received it from their ancestors, their forefathers and foremothers who worshipped here, and also from those who worshipped in other places going back and back and back thousands of years, even to the Euphrates River in Iraq, the Red Sea, the shores of the Red Sea in Africa. This inheritance of a Christian tradition has shaped our lives in countless of ways. Our daily rhythms, our practice of generosity, our capacity for prayer, the stories we tell and retell each other. It is not a perfect inheritance, but it is a sure inheritance. It gives us a sense of who we are, of where we are going. It gives us something to work towards, to mold a new future. It gives us something to push against, sometimes even to reject. You know, atheists in non-Christian countries are different from atheists in Christian countries. It gives them something else to push, something to push against, to reject. And as we're growing up, we know that is also being a part of our growing up, is a rejection of that tradition and the coming back to it again. It challenges us to take upon our shoulders the mantle of responsibility, not just for our own lives and the people around us today, but for the lives of people that will come after us, generations and generations down the line. More than a human tradition, I believe this is a divine tradition in that it is a relationship with a living God who seeks us in our human foibles even as we seek God in our spiritual rituals. A God who came in Jesus to share, to test, to correct, and to affirm our spiritual paths. It is a living inheritance, but it is not a perfect one. And so it is that through the years it has been tested, used, refined, smashed, put back together again, transformed, made new over and over and over again, and it is still not a perfect inheritance. It still has a ways to go. It's got its blind spots and its unacknowledged baggage. Some of us would exclude others, disinherit them because of their gender, their color, their culture, their sexual orientation or gender identity, their politics, or their past. We might say that you can only worship in one way and that the drum and sweetgrass has no place in a Christian house of worship. The Daughters of Zelophehad inherited such a tradition. And for us this morning are a shining example of daughters of faith. For them, it was never a question of all or nothing. It was not a decision to accept their oppression gladly, their exclusion blindly, passively accepting what they knew was wrong. Neither was it a decision to reject wholesale what they had received from their foremothers and fathers. This was a tradition that had made them what they were, that bound them to a people, that gave them a vision, a project, a God, a relationship with God. In the same way, our spiritual inheritance today has helped us to make sense of life and death. It has helped us through some dark times. It has taught us about giving and caring, about grieving and healing, about apologizing and changing, about growing and thanking and praising and living. It is an inheritance of a Christian faith, a relationship with God, a practice of prayer and praise. We know our community is broken. We are reminded on the news how bad it is. People are polarized. We are divided into camps. We deny our shared inheritance. You're not Canadian if you vote that way. We turn our backs on one another. But the witness in the Bible is that sometimes people can do better. Sometimes they can fearlessly take their cause to the highest courts of the land, even the courts of their neighbors' hearts, even the courts of God. And they can expect justice, that change will come, that a new reality will give birth, that life, something real will come to be. That is the tradition we need to continue in. First Nations wisdom, the wisdom of our Indigenous peoples on Turtle Island, states that we should always act, remembering seven generations past. And we should always act in a way that we will affect in a good way generations seven in the future. I think we need to learn from our Indigenous sisters and brothers and take our inheritance more seriously. Perhaps our being here this morning offers signs of the inheritance we have in mind. A commitment to be stewards of creation, generosity with our time and money towards those who are in need, a sacrifice of worship, fanning the flames of enthusiasm in our hearts, the gift of prayer, sowing spiritual seeds for generations to come, a pursuit of justice with such passion that our world will be different. These are ways we can pass down a spiritual inheritance to our children's children's children in this place. Indeed, if we ask God this morning, people who worship maybe 100, maybe even 1,000 years from now will be marked by our witness here in the same way that we have been marked by the witness of Mala, Noah, Hogla, Milcah, and Tirzah. Amen, and thanks be to God.